Hey, welcome to the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning here with my co-host Evan Damrell after the Cavs lost their final game of the 2021-22 season, a 107-101 loss to the Atlanta Hawks. Segment one of the show, big takeaway in the game on how Trae Young did in the Cavs. Segment two, everything really that kind of contributed to this loss over the course of this game. And segment three, what is up next for the Cavs? Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
The music you heard on the way in, at least on audio form, we're waiting on the video form of this right now, is from Master Radio, whose music can be found right now on Spotify and Apple Music. Also want to thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every single day. Remember, we are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. We want to first, before we get into the meat of the show, shout out a listener we met at the game on Friday night, Steven. Came up, said hi. It was really cool to talk to him, so shouts to Steven.
Yeah. Really cool guy.
Very cool.
He called us local celebrities and made me blush, but he's a really sweet guy. I wish I had like his socials or something to plug, but he was really nice, and we enjoy any and all fan interactions because you guys have always been great to us. Like, you aren't Sexton crazies,
okay. You were almost there, and then it got a little bit weird. All right, and we want to just thanks everyone who tuned in this season. I know everyone out there probably that's a fan of the Cavs that is listening to the show right now is probably bummed about what happened in that game. But look, we appreciate everyone tuning in. We appreciate following along with our coverage this year. It's been a really fun year to cover and talk about and everything. And we're excited to keep doing it in the offseason and dive into the draft now, I guess, which is the thing, again, we'll talk about in segment three. So, Evan, let's talk about this game first. And I think the only way to really start is Trae Young was incredible. He had 16 points in the third quarter, 16 in the fourth, didn't have a single point in the second, and kind of erupts in the second half. The Cavs were not as sharp in the second half. They took a 10-point lead into the half, and then were outscored by 16 in the second half. They just really were not able to match Atlanta and hold on to what felt like a really winnable game.
No, they really couldn't. I think a lot of things hit them at the wrong time. I think their offense slowed down and sputtered out quite a bit. I think Trae Young just kind of embracing being a villain and just killing the Cavs all throughout the second half. Like, I have a statistic in our doc that is just pretty insane from the Ringer. I think it's from the ESPN broadcast, though. I'll pull it up right now. No, Chris, you can pull it up because it's just not working on my end. But either way.
So Trae Young had...
Yeah, go ahead.
I believe the Cavs, so he had 32 points. At one point, this is from, okay, so 38 in the second half, and it doesn't have a time stamp, but at one point, Trae scored or assisted on 42 Atlanta points the second half at one point. The Cavs at that point had 38 points in the half.
Which is absolutely bonkers to think about just in the grand scheme of things because he's just that good. Like we've said time and again, like Trae Young is the guy for them. I think if you're the Cavs right now, you're disappointed in this loss. You definitely came out flat because in the first half, like, they had all the momentum. The arena was like just buzzing. They're feeding off the energy of the crowd. Time and time again, like, it felt like the Cavs were really going to pull away. They're putting this one away. They had a shot in the arm from Jared Allen. Like, everything was just falling in place for them. And then they just kind of abandoned what was working for them. I think Lauri Markkanen being exposed as a liability on defense really hurt a lot, too. I think J.B. Bickerstaff's rotations were really bad in the second half. Like, I think playing Isaac Okoro, Rajon Rondo, Lauri Markkanen, Evan Mobley, and I'm blanking on the fifth player, but
LeVert. It
wasn't Darius. What?
It was LeVert.
That was LeVert. Sorry. So, basically, Markkanen is your only shooter on the floor at that time. Like, I thought that was just a bad call in general, especially when JB pulled Garland is when Trae Young came back in. And Trae kind of eviscerated that lineup because they tried to throw Caris LeVert at him or they tried to throw Isaac Okoro at him. And more often than not, Atlanta would just force Lauri Markkanen to switch on him. Then Trae would just feast, either attacking the basket or creating separation or just pulling up from midcourt and making those shots too, because that's just what Trae Young does. And it's kind of unfortunate that this is how things had to end the way they did. You really felt that they learned something from that Nets game about themselves and were carrying that with them into this game, especially in the first half, but it just fell apart, and then it became a case of too little too late. And I was stunned a little bit that they actually blew it, and I think the arena was stunned. I think the Cavs were stunned. I just think everyone was shocked that this happened.
Yeah, look, I think for the course of this game, I thought the different looks the Cavs threw at Trey, some of the different things they did, largely worked. I think the second half...
I mean, JB setting the starting lineup of Garland, LeVert, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen, like, was really smart, because you really can't hide Trey Young on any of those five.
Yeah, I think, like, they largely kind of had, like, a good plan through, again, threw some different looks at him, did some stuff that worked. I think Trey just, like, dissected it very clearly in the second half, and I think there's some food left on the table in terms of how they made Trey work on the other end. Like, we'll get to some of the Rondo stuff, but, like, I thought, like, Okoro overall, like, actually had, like, a pretty decent game. I thought it was also a mistake to not... like, make Trey, like, Trey often got, like, possessions off on defense where he gets to kind of not have to work on the net, and that stuff doesn't always necessarily contribute to, you know, wearing that guy out. Like, there can be some trickery there, but, like, I think Okoro probably could have been screening on Young's guy at times. I think, you know, LeVert has to make the most of those opportunities, and, like, I think something they all kind of talked about after the game was how the offense second half just, like, wasn't quite as good. It was not as pacey. It was a little bit worn down. It wasn't...
They looked slower in the second half.
The juice just kind of faded, and, like, I think the Cavs will, like, look at this and say, okay, there's some stuff we didn't do. There's some stuff that didn't quite work for us here. And, like, you know, obviously Trey does them in. They didn't handle some of the Trey stuff down the stretch. I mean, Trey had a magnificent second half. He's the best player in this game and deserves all that hype for a reason. It just ultimately, some of this, you leave a little bit, I think, underwhelmed with how Cleveland handled that second half in terms of whether it's lineups, whether it's just performances of different guys. Like, there's a lot of different things that you could look at in this game. I think the Cavs, you know, do they do it differently? Do they try hitting a different button? And does it turn out differently? I think ultimately just, you know, some of the execution and either into the floor and some of the decisions made do you in. I mean, like, in this, Evan, we talked about this, you know, we never talked about this after the game. It's like, you know, Darius was like 2-6 in the fourth, and that, again, when Trey's doing what Trey did, you have to match him to some degree, and at least try to, and, like, he couldn't do that. Like, it was, even in the fourth quarter, the Hawks made two more field goals overall than the Cavs, but that was a marginal difference that kind of, after they erupted in the third, ultimately does the Cavs in, and there's a lot of, again, little things we can hit on, but they just weren't quite up to the Hawks' par in the second half, after being, I think, frankly, utterly incredible in the first half. Like, we should note that they were, like, really, really good and really sharp in the first, and then just kind of plummeted out. We're like, we're not even obviously going to talk about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And shouts to Brad Rowland, who was our guest previewing this game with us, and he kind of pointed out the fact that DeLon Wright was one of the best point of attack defenders for the Hawks. He played really well, and I think he kind of made Garland uncomfortable at times too, and I think maybe JB was trying to avoid fatiguing Garland for the final stretch by having DeLon, because DeLon Wright, I believe, was out there with Trae Young during that kind of pseudo run the Hawks made in the fourth quarter to kind of take the lead and never look back. And it's just tough, man. I'm still processing my overall emotions on it, because it's kind of hard to believe the season's over for us. We'll obviously be talking about what's next later on in the show for not just the Cavs, but for us as well in the show as well. And
you made that sound kind of ominous there, buddy.
Oh, no. You can't get rid of me that easily, Chris. I cannot even close.
I'm going to turn your little, like, shirt tuck there into an NFT.
Deal. No fucking thanks. But wouldn't be the first... it's just kind of tough to palate this, because there's a lot of, like, amazing moments in this game. A lot of, like, Lauri Markkanen was lights out in the first half, and, like, yes, he was a little bit of a liability defensively, but the offensive output he was providing could compensate and counterbalance for that a little bit. Jared Allen looked sharp at times, even though, like he said post game, he was only 70% of himself. Evan Mobley had, like, this otherworldly block in the first half, like, or in the third quarter. It was one of those moments, but it wasn't in the fourth. But Darius Garland just kind of came up short in this one, I'd say. I think that's tough. I think that's a little disappointing, just because he was highly inefficient in this game, and I think he looked gassed down the stretch just because the Cavs leaned on him so much this season. We'll talk about maybe on some offseason priorities, but he's definitely one of my biggest ones too for the Cavs. That may be a topic we explore more down the stretch, but yeah, it is what it is. A little bum the fans left, not to really give, like, a proper send-off to this Cavs team, but Oh, well. I also get being pissed in the moment that you paid money to watch them choke a massive lead at home.
Yes. Let's just note on the Nansen did return. Was, I think, pretty effective, even if he wasn't as pissed. Did, like, clutch his hand at one point at the end of this game. We're a little like...
you mean Allen, not Nance.
What did I say? I'm sorry. The Pelicans are playing well right now, and he just missed your free throws in late in a game where they were up by three, and if he would have made at least one, they would have been up by a two-possession game. So a little dicey there, Larry. But Allen returns, did clutch his finger late in this game as it looked like maybe he got himself injured again or aggravated that injury. Says after the game that he's not going to have surgery. Felt like he owed it to the team to come back. So that's where things end with Allen. Evan, do you have any just thoughts on how Allen looked in his first game in over a month before we go into the break?
I think there are clear signs of fatigue. There are clear signs of rust. I think JB had to kind of stagger his minutes a little bit of time so he didn't completely burn him out early into the game. But I think it gave the Cavs the shot in the arm they needed. Like, they're playing loose, they're playing fast, they're playing free, they're playing their style of basketball in that first half. But there were just some concerns when, like, you and I noticed that he was grabbing at his left hand and, like just squeezing it a little bit to make sure it was okay. He stayed out there and kept playing. The surgery comments make sense, I guess, if it's not a serious thing. If he talked to doctors about it and he talked to his family about it, and they think it's best for him not to have a surgical procedure on and just let it heal naturally, that's fine, but hopefully there's no complications from it long term. But I think he looked fine. How did you think he looked?
Yeah, he was fine. I needed boost. The crowd reaction to him was crazy. I mean, like, look, we're not gonna... It's hard to touch on some of this because they lost and we have other things to do. But like the crowd in this game, the vibe for this game, the overall atmosphere was awesome. It felt good to get to cover that kind of basketball in Cleveland again. Like, selfishly, like, I want more of that. I like being in those environments. It's much more fun to cover and talk about a team that is like this than it is a team that has been really bad the last couple of years. So we'll talk about this more and reflect on the season, I think, as we go forward here. But Evan, first, I'm going to want to break here. So when we come back, we're going to dissect some of the things that went wrong in some detail. I have some notes about JB, about LeVert, about Rondo. We'll dive into all of that and more after the break. But first, I'm going to tell everyone about Bet Online. BetOnline is your number one source for your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including last week's Masters Championship, podcasts, and reviews for all of the different leagues this season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. Right, for instance, the Cavs came into this game as 2-point underdogs against Atlanta, and maybe you bet on that, maybe you felt that the Jared Allen return was going to impact that in some way. You could have bet on it at BetOnline, and they're constantly updating it with the latest information and helping you make informed decisions. And look, you can bet on everything, MMA, NFL stuff, futures, NBA awards, soccer, all kinds of stuff over at our friends at BetOnline. Head to their website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. That's BetOnline. That's where the game starts. A lot of NBA playoffs coming up. Check them out at betonline.net. All right, back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris. That is Evan. Evan, let's go into some notes here. I've got a couple. I want to start with JB Bickerstaff because I did not think that this was necessarily the sharpest JB Bickerstaff game. I thought the decision to play Rondo Okoro together while Garland sat for that little stretch in the fourth, as Trey comes back in, mind you, and Markkanen's the only shooter on the floor, was a minute to me. It only ended up being like a minute of actual game time, but they were up two and then they're down two. It's like a quick four-point swing that I think was kind of costly. You know, he has to have some culpability, I think, in how the play, how the kind of the offense functioned in the second half. That's not all on the guys. It's somewhat on the players, obviously, but it's not all on them, obviously. I think you just look at this and say, okay, this is, you know, they talk, I think one of the themes of postgame, one of the themes of thinking about where this team could go is that there's still a lot of untapped potential here, right? There's still a lot of room to grow for Garland, for Mobley, for Allen, for all these guys, for the most part. I think you look at this, this is probably also a learning experience for JB too, because I do not think that this was maybe the sharpest Bickerstaff game that we've seen this year.
No, it wasn't. I question a lot of his rotations, like I said. Rondo, Okoro, LeVert, Mobley, Markkanen is very questionable, especially, like, I know JB is a proponent of playing big, but that's a pretty traditional lineup, but there's not a lot of shooting. Rondo is not a plus shooter. Okoro is not a plus shooter. LeVert is a very streaky shooter. I have some thoughts on him in a little bit too, but Markkanen's the only shooter, and he's pretty inconsistent as well, especially when he doesn't have like a point guard he's comfortable with, because I just don't know if he and Rondo are fully comfortable sharing the floor together like he and Darius are. And I question a lot of the rotations and subs in general. Like I said, Trae Young was coming back in when JB put Darius back on the bench and inserted Rondo and Markkanen back into the game. And I'm just like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, if you want to win this game, you need to ride your best player and just ride him out. And then if he's gassed, he's gassed. But, like, I don't know. It just feels like the priorities are a little off. I question that a little bit. I think this wasn't his sharpest game, like you said. I think the Cavs in general took their foot off the gas, and maybe JB was trying to say the right things in the huddle. You and I are in attendance at the game. We were watching the broadcast on ESPN, so we don't really know what was happening.
Yeah, I mean, we have no, like, some of the stuff that I think, just it's just another, like, we have a, I think, a specific lens on this that it is not access.
We don't have like the mic'd up access that maybe they have,
or just like, we're not like omnipotent like viewing this. Like, there's always stuff that we're not gonna see in terms of game to game stuff.
Precisely. So it's just offensively they fell apart. I think maybe they should have turned to Kevin Love a little bit more, just because he was playing well at times. Like, I understand the defensive liabilities, but you're also playing Larry Markkanen and watching him get hunted by Trae Young on so many possessions. So, like, what the hell do you have to lose with Kevin Love? It's just, this wasn't JB Bickerstaff's best game, especially with how well he coached the Cavs in the second, third, and fourth quarter against the Nets. And in the first and second quarter, Cavs look great, but then they completely fell flat in the second half, and I think a lot of that does fall on the shoulders of JB.
Yeah, let's talk about the Kevin Love thing for a second, because he plays 10 minutes, really not a factor in this game. This is where I come down on it. I understand if you're concerned about the defensive issues with Kevin Love, right? Like, it was very clear that when he was in the game, what Atlanta was going to do is they were going to run it. They were going to have Kevin Love's man come and screen for Trae. They were going to force a switch, and they were going to say, okay, we have Kevin Love on the line against Trae Young. We feel good about this, and that's like a very tricky place for the Cavs to be in, right? What I also look at in terms of this is just saying, okay, all year especially in the second half when the game offensively kind of slipped away from Cleveland a little bit, Kevin Love, especially in a post-Rubio world without context and all this stuff, has been the guy that has really filled in for you and kind of patched over some of these offensive things. You want LeVert to be that guy. LeVert was not that guy in this game. He has not been that guy for a variety of reasons. They got him. Kevin Love has been that guy that has really patched over a lot of that stuff. And it's like, I understand, again, the defensive concerns, all of that stuff. I wonder if that was a button that if they get to redo this, if that they would maybe hit again a little bit. Let's talk about LeVert. I think overall had like some good moments, to his credit. You know, like, look, had a nice
assist in the first half. Yeah, nice.
Had a nice assist to Mobley in tradition where he had a nice feed. There were some things that worked. Hit two threes going toe-to-toe with Trae in the second half that they absolutely needed to kind of keep the game winnable. And we should talk about the Larry Markkanen thing at the end of this game as well, the gaffe that he made. But and Markkanen had a lot of threes in this game too, like, to his credit. Like, it wasn't all bad. It's just that last gaffe is going to stick in people's mind. I think the LeVert leaves you a little underwhelmed too. I mean, he had some shots.
Yeah, and like I said, LeVert's a bit of a streaky shooter. He finished the night 4-9 from 3, but when your best shooter is Darius Garland, yes, he is off. He's 1-7 for the night overall. And then, like, Larry Markkanen's probably your second best shooter, and then after that it's Kevin Love. But LeVert was making a strong impact in a lot of ways, but like in the second half when the Cavs really started to bog down on offense, and JV said it was part of the problem is they played a lot of iso ball, it was LeVert who was doing a lot of the isolating, where he would dribble out the ball for 20 plus seconds and then kick it to a teammate or just take an ill-advised shot that would just kill a possession for the Cavs to turn it over. And like that happened for a couple sequences where it just really felt like it was breaking Cleveland's back, and then Atlanta was just taking advantage of it, because I think just because this team has been to the Eastern Finals last year and like they know what they're doing, and Nate McMillan is a good coach, like he should get a ton of credit for this game, because I think he made the right adjustments for the Hawks in the second half as well to kind of get Trae Young easier looks. But it's frustrating to watch Caris LeVert kind of fall apart down the stretch, and we talked about this pregame. where like the fit just hasn't really been there for him. Granted, he missed a month and he's just been trying to learn on the fly and like just dealing with his own issues, and maybe you give him the benefit of the doubt of training camp and like times to fully get healthy and everything else too, and see what you have next year with him. But do you think the Cavs have maybe not so much now that they have their first round pick back, but do you think they have a little bit of buyer's remorse when they didn't trade Caris LeVert the first round pick in Ricky Rubio for Eric Gordon instead? Also, my cat turned on my TV behind me, if you see my TV on now.
Probably a little bit, I would think. You know, I think there probably is a little bit of remorse. I think, you know, certainly it hasn't gone well, and there's some reasons that are kind of just it's life and you're navigating this, but he was... particularly good. Evan, let's go into break, though. After the break, we're going to cover what's next for the Cavs, what's next for Allegra Fransovsky. We'll talk first about
Markkanen. I'd like to talk about the Larry Markkanen.
So we're going to talk about Markkanen, and I want to talk, for the first time, I generally want to talk about a couple of reffing decisions. Okay. There's two I want to talk about, but first you're going to tell everyone about Shady Rays.
Yeah, well, the Cavs are going on vacation probably now, and they might need some new sunglasses, and they should check out today's sponsor, Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for a fraction of the price. That means polarized lenses, well-constructed durable frames, and premium high-end finishes. Also, something you won't find anywhere else is Shady Rays' insane protection program. Shady Rays includes lost and broken protection on every pair, and they'll send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happened. Give them a try, and if you don't love them, you'll pay nothing. It's as simple as that. Plus, 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America when you shop with Shady Rays exclusively. This deal is for our listeners. Head to ShadyRays.com and use code LOCKEDON to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's code LOCKEDON for the best deal of the season. 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses, backed by over 150,000 verified 5-star reviews. I'm one of them. I use the deal. I have two pairs coming in for the price of one. I'm so excited. Check out Shady Rays today.
All right, last segment here. Let's talk about the marketing gaffe. So in case people didn't see it.
This goes hand in hand with the JV coaching mistakes.
Okay. So what? In case people didn't see what happens, they get a stop. There's like a little more than 24 seconds
left. He steals the ball 24 seconds.
And he makes an outlet pass and gets picked off. And then they get it back to, I think, Herder gets it back to Trey. Trey makes two free throws. It was a 3-point game when he gets the ball, and when he commits a turnover and Trey, it's the free throws. It's a 5-point game with under 24 seconds left. That kind of was like put out any chances of a comeback, any hopes of embers of the comeback there. Just like a really kind of bonkers thing. And like I know he said after the game like they were trying to like there was broken like they were trying to push and all that stuff. I think a timeout there made some sense. And just what I don't know what. I don't know what Markkanen was really doing there either.
I'm trying to check when the play happened.
It was like 24 and a half.
29 yeah. seconds left.
The steal is like a 24 Cavs, and a half, and then they fouled Trey like a 20.
No, it was at 29
okay,
seconds.
They fouled Trey at 20.
Steals at 26. They
yeah,
foul Trey
Young 23 and a half.
24 seconds.
Like 23 and a half, yeah.
And then the Cavs call timeout after that.
Yeah.
So they should have called timeout when Markkanen stole the ball, probably advanced the ball, drew up an out-of-timeout play. You know, the Cavs aren't the most creative at doing that. That's better than kind of the haphazard.
Well, you get a chance to tie the game and like maybe send it to overtime.
Yep, and I think that's where just questioning JB goes into play, because JB told Lowry from the sidelines, like, go, like, move, because it was broken. It was haphazard. Maybe they can get a quick, easy, fast-break bucket and save the timeout. I just think in a high-pressure situation where you have so many players who have never made the playoffs, Rondo, Kevin Love, Caris LeVert, and Jared Allen only being your quote-unquote season players, with LeVert and Allen not counting too much, even though they have some experience, it would make sense to kind of help them regain their composure too, because I think the Cavs started to tighten up a little bit down the stretch, and I think that also played a part in them kind of losing too.
Yes. Okay. Let's just quick on the refs. Look, I think the Herder push on Allen that negated the Garland three is egregious. I don't understand. I just think that should count as a three.
That's the thing, because Bobby Marks, I think, or somebody said that, like, the refs in the arena have the jurisdiction to decide whether or not that three-pointer counts.
That was...
In those scenarios, like, they should be two separate incidents, and they use the excuse that the foul occurred before the three, and I'm like, that's pretty weak.
Yeah. That was insane, and that would have been an 11-point Cavs lead. It cuts back to 8, and then the Hawks go the other way. Secondly, I thought, like, I hope he gets well. I know he's hurt. That should have been a flagrant on Capella.
It should have been a flagrant on Capella because he pulled Evan Mobley down by the neck and Mobley into him. And also, I think, who fouled Mobley on the fast break? Was it Herder?
Bogdanovich. I don't feel as strongly about that one.
So that's the thing. I have a friend who texted me and said, like, that should have been a flagrant. And I replied saying, listen, if you don't call a flagrant on Capella for the play that happened before, you do not call a flagrant in that scenario.
Yeah,
you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I also need to be honest, I need to watch that one back more than the other one. So that is what it is. Okay.
It seemed like a very hard foul at the time. Other just interesting calls. Yeah, that the Herder push was a weird one. Like, I'm still confused by that. Like, I didn't think about it much at the moment, but now that you bring it up, I'm like really processing it again. Like, it's just a lot of weird officiating. You can't really complain about like Trey foul baiting or grifting, like, in that regard. Like, I think that was fairly called to an extent. I think the Cavs did foul Trey a little bit in the third quarter, and they especially fouled him in the fourth quarter. Like, they did a really good job containing him in the first half. They may had him very frustrated, but I don't know. It's tough. Like, that call, the non-call on Herder, and then the non-call, or they reviewed it on Capella and said it was a non-flagrant, still objectively questionable in my eyes.
Yes. Okay. Let's end on this. Now that the season is done, the Cavs obviously, you know, have lost. Their season is over, unfortunately, for them. The Cavs are now in off-season mode. They are heading into a busy summer. We're not going to break down, you know, like the things that we think are going to happen, what likes to happen, all that stuff. We're going to do like a ton of player reviews. We're going to do free agency stuff. We have to do draft stuff now. The draft lottery, as far as dates go, is May 17th. So we're going to start doing some draft stuff. We'll do a daily tankathon today, maybe have some fun with it. Start evaluating the roster. Let's
start doing it now. Pull it up.
Yeah, do one while I kind of finish outlining this. I think one of the things we are going to do is kind of player-focused weeks to kind of recap the season. So Darius Garland.
Weeks or like a day?
Well, I think for like Darius Garland, we could do like a week where it's like we outline kind of a season, what's to come.
See, like, brother, I don't think I could talk a whole week about Larry Markkanen.
I'm not saying for everyone. I'm saying Darius, Jarrett, Evan. There's guys like that. And we can take mailbag questions on guys. If you have Cavs questions, now's a great time to send them in.
Draft questions are good too. Maybe you want to tune us into some prospects that maybe you think the Cavs should be interested in, because admittedly, Chris and I weren't paying much attention to college stuff this year because I was pretty convinced the Cavs are a playoff team and the pick would go to Indiana.
There's also only so much time in the day.
Exactly.
So the Cavs, yeah, but I think
Ali Ali from the Akron Zips is not going to be the 14th pick in the NBA draft.
So just, okay, weird. But we look at where the Cavs are at. This is going to, I think, just to set the stage for it, this is going to be a pivotal summer. You have the Colin Sexton extension hanging out there, and what could come with that. Darius Garland is extension eligible. You know, they have the draft now, and they have those two picks. You know, they're, I think, like $21 million right now underneath the luxury tax. Like, they have some wiggle room, but not an infinite amount. Like, and this is a summer where, like, if you want to build on this year, you have a summer where, like, if this is going to leave a taste in your mouth, not only is the work we're not going to see, you know, going to have an impact on that, what Garland and Okoro and Sexton and Mobley and Allen, all these guys do, getting into next season, getting into a position where, like, you can get to a spot where you can improve on some of this stuff and how you're going to improve the roster, that's going to be necessary. The East is competitive. You can't just assume that, like, you're going to be able to improve on some of this. The Cavs are going to have to look at this and say, okay, we had a disappointing end of the year. Yes, we can cite injuries. Yes, we can cite things that didn't go our way in the course of the season. They have work to do this offseason, and it's going to be very fun to break it down and see how they approach this, considering how this ended. I think they're certainly due to have a hard look in the mirror at pretty much every spot on the roster, saying it's Garland, Mobley, and Allen, and say, okay, we got to figure out how we're going to move forward here around this trio that we have and try to build on the success that they have this year. Because I think overall, you know, we'll maybe should wax a little more on this come Monday, come Tuesday, but this was a successful season. This was a successful season.
Chris and I are like processing our overall emotions on how it ended still. But yes, this was a highly successful
season. It's 1:12 in the morning. I am tired. You are, Evan is tired. We are just...
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, we're pushing this out. We're getting a recap up, and then we're going to take some time and think about this stuff and kind of dive deep into it. But I
spend Sunday with our families.
Yes. Evan, I will just say, I think to end the show before I get your Tankathon results.
It's being really slow, so keep going.
Okay.
I think the overwhelming amount of Thunder fans simming lotteries because they got the Clippers pick is breaking it right now.
Well, we should note that like 97.8% chances the Cavs are going to have the 14th pick.
They have a 0.7% chance of getting the first overall pick. They have a less than 1% chance. So, like, the Cavs are going to be picking in the middle of the first round, guys, if they pick. Like, they could pick a player and trade him.
Yeah, but, and you'll know right away in the draft lottery tonight if they're going to make a big jump. But, Evan, would you, I say pretty unequivocally, this was a successful Cavs season, right? Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I got it to work. That's why I'm laughing. Yes, this was a very
you hit it like what 30 times before you.
I hit it once because the website finally loaded. I hit Sim Lottery on my phone because it's not loading on my computer, and that's why I laughed evilly to myself. Yeah, this was a successful season for the Cavs because let's not forget Vegas had them projected at 26.5. I say this all the time. Chris and I weren't super high on this team. I think most people outside of the organization or even within the organization weren't super high on their prospects as well. And they were literally a game away from making the playoffs and playing the Miami Heat in the first round. And that's so successful. And they have kind of quickly built this big three through the draft and Houston's frugality in acquiring Jared Allen as well. And it's really exciting to see where they go, but the onus is now on Kobe Altman, Brandon Weems, and everybody else in the organization.
Yep,
Mike Gansey as well. Flesh out what they have, figure out the Sexton situation, figure out how much you're going to obviously pay Darius Garland the max. Like, you need to take care of things, need to take a hard look. Like, do you want to keep Caris LeVert long-term, or do you want to flip him in the summer, maybe bring him back and trade him at the deadline? Is Lauri Markkanen is your fit? Do you really want to keep playing big, or do you want to play a more modern style of basketball? Like, there's a lot of questions, a lot of variables. It's an exciting time to be a Cavs fan.
Yeah, we're going to break it all down here on Lockdown Cavs. Thanks again for tuning in all season. If you want a great second listen today, go check out the Lockdown NBA podcast from the first jump ball of the play-in tournament to the last possession of the finals. Lockdown experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams, so go check that out. This has been, again, a really fun season. Thanks again for tuning in all year. Please subscribe, rate, and review to the pod if you haven't already. What's your sim? 14th pick?
The first pick in the draft, Chet Holmgren. The second pick goes to the San Antonio Spurs. The third pick goes to the Thunder via the Clippers. The fourth pick goes to the Pistons, and the fifth pick goes to the Rockets.
So you have like a very like... one low 1% chance outcome
is what I had. Derrick Rose odds is what I'm trying to say. Pre-flattened Derrick Rose odds.
Okay. On that note, everyone be well. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday, kind of reflecting a little bit more on the season that was. And thanks again for tuning in all year. It's been a lot of fun. And yeah, enjoy.
See you around.